What's up, everyone? It's Michael Scotto, HoopsHype.com's NBA writer and host of the Hoops Hype Podcast. With the NBA trade deadline approaching on March 25th, the Houston Rockets are in fire sale mode right now with a number of players in trade rumors. Two-time All-Star Victor Oladipo is on the block, PJ Tucker, Ben McLemore, and even the water boy at this point, I think we could say, is on the trade block too. So on today's episode, I wanted to bring in my former colleague, Kelly Eco. He covers the Houston Rockets for The Athletic, and he does a great job with them. He's a younger writer in the league that I think you should keep an eye on. One of my good friends as well. And we're going to talk about those trade talks for the Rockets and other moves that they can make by the deadline and more. Kelly, appreciate you hopping on the line, brother. How you doing?
Big bro. What's good, man? Thanks for having me, man.
My man. It's always a pleasure. You know, hopefully we can get back together again at a game sometime in the calendar year or for summer league for sure. But your Houston Rockets are pretty active on those phones. like I touched on, you know, in the open, pretty much a full fire sale mode for them at this point going into the rebuild. You know, you hear all the slogans, you know, fade for Cade, Cade Cunningham, and, you know, trying to get as high of a draft pick as they can get as they move on from the James Harden era. So with that in mind, I think the first guy and probably the biggest name on Houston's roster that could realistically be moved, Victor Oladipo, the two-time former All-Star. This is a guy that is in the prime of his career. You know, he's 28 years old right now, and you know, we've heard rumblings about teams like the Knicks having an eye on him and the Miami Heat. Now, with the Knicks, he's got the Scott Perry connection from when he drafted him back 1 year ago. And Miami, you know, there's been rumblings around the league that he's wanted to go there in free agency anyway. I don't know personally how he would mesh with Jimmy Butler, but that would be a problem they'd have to figure out if they got him. So first thing I wanted to ask you about Victor Oladipo is what's the latest you're hearing in terms of teams that are interested in him? And in terms of what are teams offering? Are there offers that are on the board that the Houston Rockets are looking at right now?
So for Victor, I think it's more of a situation where the Rockets kind of understand now, you know, obviously the 15-game skid has been one that kind of hit them out of nowhere, but they like Oladipo a lot. They brought him in, wanted to hang on to him, you know, if they could. But at the same time, they're also becoming a bit more realistic and saying that if a team comes in and can offer something that is of higher value to them than, you know, just hanging on to him, they'll obviously trade him. So Victor's the kind of guy where you see why Steven Sauce wanted to bring him in as a two-way player. He's able to, well, he should be able to score all three levels, defending the different schemes and kind of take the pressure off of John Wall and Christian Wood. Obviously, the injuries have come in. Christian hasn't been there. John's been in and out of the lineup, and Victor's been pretty inconsistent. So as the deadline approaches, there are teams like a Miami, like a New York, like a possibly a Denver, you know, that would take him off their hands. And if a deal comes in where the Rockets perceive the value as higher as what they have Victor as, then you know, he could very well be traded.
I remember when Oladipo did his initial press conference when he was acquired by Houston, and he was saying, you know, if it fits and things work out and if he's happy, he would be open to staying. But he said that, and I'm quoting him on this, essentially it's like a business plan. You've got to go through every aspect of the business plan before you kind of figure out if you want to invest in it. So from my standpoint, looking at it, if I'm in Victor's shoes, you know, he's going to be a guy that's up there as one of the top regarded big name free agents on the market. You know, we saw the rumblings about him passing up the extension, which I didn't make much of. I think we all realized that, first of all, they couldn't offer that many years anyway, and he would look for a long-term deal. I didn't necessarily make too much of that, but it gave you a gauge that he's clearly looking for a raise from his $21 million salary and try to get as much as he can in the prime of his career. But one thing that I thought that was interesting, and you mentioned about when they acquired him, about trying to hold on to him. In the trade, you know, they flipped Karras to Indiana, Karras LeVert, that is, for him. And I almost wondered, if you were Houston, why not just hang on to LeVert, who's younger than Oladipo? Now, he wasn't an all-star yet at the time, but he has the potential to be that, and he's younger. For a rebuilding team, you know, I know they were in kind of transitioning and figuring things out at the time, but to me, I thought that that would have been more of a worthwhile move for them. What did you think of that when they ended up flipping Karis LeVert for Victor Oladipo at the time?
So initially, you know, a lot of people were trying to understand what went into that decision, because LeVert is also a talented player, albeit a younger, less experienced player than Victor, but he's still a talent nonetheless on the perimeter. Now, as I understand, you know, Steven Silas was very big on Victor. He's somebody who had a big part in their decision to bring Victor in, because, as I mentioned earlier, he fell in love with Victor's two-way ability. Probably something where they saw how John had played, you know, since coming back. That kind of probably played a part into that decision to bring in Victor, thinking, you know, Victor could come in and be a 20-25 point scorer alongside John, kind of help them transition off of the James Harden era. Because as you all know, you know, James Harden's impact was so great, and his offensive, just the makeup, he took up so much of their possessions and everything ran through him. So him being traded, there had to be a way to figure out how to manufacture offense in his departure. And John, as talented a player is, he can't do it all alone. Christian Wood can't do it by himself. So they brought in the more experienced, the older Victor Oladipo to kind of take the pressure off. So, and there have been flashes of Victor at his best. You know, we saw the 37-point game against the Nets, ironically enough. The other times where him and John looked like a very strong defensive duo against some of the league's backcourts. But, you know, I just think the injuries have just been too much, and there have been too many inconsistencies to kind of get a full read on this team, and especially a full read on him. Obviously, he struggled in areas like, you know, dribble pull-ups. He hasn't been effective attacking the rim as well as he would have hoped to. Isolation basketball has been kind of a struggle. He has done well, you know, when he's stationed in the perimeter, catch-and-shoot situations. But that's kind of not what they want him to do. They want him to be a heavy on the ball guy, create for others, create for himself, score at all three levels, and kind of take this thing to the next level. So if you want to call the project underwhelming, I mean, that would be fair to say, but there are a lot of situations that have gone on that play into why it's been so inconsistent, as you've seen.
You know, it's interesting when you talk about, when you mentioned at the start of that answer that Steven Silas was a guy that really was high on him and played a role in the decision-making. You think about his tenure, and you got James Harden and you got Russell Westbrook advocating for him to come, then they're both gone. And obviously, you know, Christian Wood's been hurt. It's been difficult for him. You know, we'll touch on that later on, but as far as Oladipo goes, in terms of, if Houston gets an offer that's, you know, worthwhile to move him, and speaking with other executives around the league, they definitely think that he's going to get moved at some point. And with that in mind, what is Houston looking for in return for Victor Oladipo should they move him?
Well, in the event that they do move him, I would assume that they are looking for a, you know, starting level two guard, you know, a scorer, someone that can come in and complement, you know, John Wall, Christian Wood, Jason Tate, others. They need bodies. They need healthy bodies more than anything right now. They need someone that can help put points on the board, because their offense, I think they've been the league's bottom two offense over the past 3 weeks, which is a shock considering where this team used to be at. But more than anything, they need to score. I think this team lacks. They lack a lot of talent in terms of offensive firepower, and you've been seeing it. Like the games that they compete in, they struggle to score through 5-6 minute stretches, and that just kills them. I think if they do move Victor, they would need to get back a pretty decent level two guard or a three. Just someone that can put some points on the board for sure.
So we had touched on the connections about, you know, the Knicks with Scott Perry, the Heat with the free agency interest that has been seemingly out there for about a year. And then you also mentioned Denver as well. Denver, I think, would be interesting in terms of a team that is trying to take that next step in the Western Conference and try to make a finals run with the group that they have. You wonder if they're one move pushing the chips into the center of the table away from doing that. Is there a team that you see in the Victor Oladipo trade sweepstakes that is the front runner right now?
So in terms of front running, I wouldn't say front, but I mean, everyone knows where he wants to end up. He said it before. Everyone knows about the Miami link. They know about, you know, New York. Honestly, I think if there was going to be a front runner, and this is my own opinion, I would have to say New York, because they're a team that desperately wants to make the playoffs. And they're the exact kind of team that could put together some kind of deadline package to kind of get Victor over there. But, you know, we all know Victor wants to end up in Miami. You know, that's been out there for a long time. I just think that the way the Rockets see the situation, they have a number of talented players that are going to be valuable to contenders, and they should play this thing smartly. You want to get the best value back, because if you think about it, Victor is here because, you know, James Harden isn't. So if you want to use the law of, you know, equating things to other ones, you have to think of that in that whole holistic aspect. Because I think, you know, getting James off the books and getting the four picks and the pick swaps, yeah, that's pretty good business. But at the end of the day, if you're going to lose Victor as well, you have to get back something, you know, because you don't want to just be left with picks and pick swaps after losing one of the greatest players of this generation. So I think the Rockets have their work cut out for them. But there are enough interested teams where they can kind of play the market and kind of see which offer is best for them.
I just think it's like you were saying, that a lot of people know. It's almost been like the most open secret out there that he would like to go to South Beach if possible. And so that's
the biggest thing. Like, so if you're Houston or if you're Miami, do you want to try and trade for him now or wait, you know, 4 months until free agency? You know, that's kind of how I see it.
Well, the other scenario too with that is, like, if you're a team that's debating acquiring him, you're looking at him then as a rental if he really wants to. Now, it takes two to tango. Does Miami have as much interest in him? That remains to be seen. But if you're a team that's, you know, acquiring a guy that's going to be a free agent on the market in a couple of months, you're not going to want to give up a lot either. So, again, to me, that's where I think Houston's going to have to maybe not have as much leverage in terms of getting something back for him as they would have thought when they first got him. You know, him playing, he's shown ups and downs at times thus far. And to me, that's the biggest thing. If he would have came out of the gate, you know, killing it, you know, Harden, as much as he was, you know, causing a stir in Houston, the guy was putting up numbers the first couple of games, making it be known to teams that, like, hey, you trade me, that's what you're getting. Then it went the other way just to kind of move the process along to get him out of there. But I do think ultimately they have to move Oladipo. At 28, he's not really a part of the timeline for the rebuild that they're doing, which is going to center around Christian Wood. You know, as I touched on in a recent story, he's the guy that's as close to untouchable for that team as possible. And, you know, you had reported too that other guys like Ben McLemore are on the market. We'll touch on them. But before we do that, I did want to get your thoughts also on PJ Tucker, who at 35, I was surprised that PJ, in a way, the second Harden was moved, I was like, okay, PJ's got to be the next to go, because he's a guy that's going to help a contender now. An excellent defender, even though he hasn't been all defensive team guy. Excellent defender that can guard even 1 through 5 if you have to on at times, and that's incredibly important in the playoffs. Now, with that said, he does have a market where teams are looking to get him playoff contenders. So some of the main teams that we've heard more recently, the Bucks, the Lakers, the Heat as well. You know, when you look at those teams, and I mean, obviously there have been other teams that were mentioned, you know, the Sixers because of the Daryl Morey connection, you know, the Nets because of the connection to Mike D'Antoni and some of the guys there, obviously Harden as well. You know, I thought maybe the Nuggets would have been a little bit more in there than they were, but doesn't seem necessarily that way. So when you're looking at like the Bucks, Lakers, and the Heat, do you see a team that is a front runner for PJ at this time? And, you know, what specifically they're looking to get back?
Well, for PJ, because the Rockets understand that he's a valuable asset and can help a contender trying to get over the hump, they do want a young player back, you know, as well as, you know, draft compensation. You know, that's pretty much the standard for any Tucker deal. In terms of front runners, I wouldn't necessarily. There have been deals that have been on the table. The Rockets get calls about Tucker pretty much every day. There have been deals that they could have taken, but I think it's kind of similar to Victor, where you want to make sure you're getting the best offer from those teams that you can, because, you know, once you trade PJ, he's not coming back. So you have to try and see what else is out there. PJ is somebody, like I said, who you come in, you bring him into a team and he instantly boosts the locker room. He becomes the hardest worker on the team. He's going to be the guy that, and you've heard James talk about it, CP talk about it, Russ talk about it. Other people around the league have said it. PJ is the guy that will do the dirty work, and he's always going to be, he's durable. I think it made news this season that he actually started getting hurt and missing games because he had been their Iron Man for so long. So when it comes to PJ Tucker, I think the biggest thing is which team is going to be hungry enough to pull the trigger now, because, you know, if the trade line day comes and goes and he's still on the Rockets, that's a failure for everybody. So I think that teams have to act now and they have to be aggressive because he's a pretty coveted, you know, player.
As far as, you know, contenders and stuff, obviously PJ wants to go to a contender. I get that, certainly. And I think that Houston will ultimately do right by him the way they did right by Harden. I think it's just them taking time to get it done. I will say, when I looked at the trade market for him, you know, when the Nets came up, you know, post the Harden trade, the first thing I thought of was, well, it would have been smoother to, if PJ Tucker was going to the Nets, I would have thought it would have happened during the James Harden 14 blockbuster, as opposed to, you know, now, oh, well, it's done, let's circle back later and possibly move Dinwiddie, I know had been talked about through rumors and whatnot. But at that point, I didn't see it. If they didn't make it happen then, I didn't see why it would necessarily happen now. Not that that much would have changed. You know, Daryl Morey has tried to build shooters around Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. You know, PJ is a guy he trusts. He can hit the corner three, especially at a high rate. I thought that would have been something, but I don't know, you know, young asset wise, I don't see Daryl Morey necessarily trying to move a guy like a Tyrese Maxey or a guy that, you know, Houston would be interested in that could be a piece long term. So there would be a divide there for the Nuggets. You know, I was talking about this with our salary cap guru, Yossi Goslin here at Hoopsite. You know, they could have took PJ into their Jeremy Grant traded player exception, but same thing. What assets are you giving up long term in terms of trying to get PJ? Now, that kind of leaves you with a couple of teams, the Bucks, Lakers, Heat, like I talked about. You know, for Miami, they have plenty of expiring contracts, which Houston's going to want. They're not going to want to take back salary unless it's a younger guy that's cheaper that they can have under control, as you had touched on. In terms of draft pick compensation, going to be interesting to see. I don't know if they could pull a first round pick. If they can get maybe multiple seconds, that would be something that I think would be more likely at this point, because he is going to be a free agent afterward and he'll be sought again on that market as well. I thought the Bucks would be interesting for him. You know, if they could part with maybe a DJ Wilson or something, a younger guy that we've seen with like Kevin Porter Jr., Raphael Stone, the general manager of the Rockets, has taken guys that have been, you know, drafted with potential, but didn't succeed in their first stop, and try to bring them there and make them a reclamation project. So, you know, just some guys to keep an eye on there. And as far as the Lakers, they don't have a, you know, I don't see them necessarily trying to move Talen Horton Tucker, a younger guy for them, but time will tell if they get that championship itch to repeat. You never know. Now, that said, you also had reported, I remember, Ben McLemore is a guy, a shooter that could get some, that is getting some interest from teams and is available on the market. I would put Daniel House in that same boat as well. Both of those guys are 27. So in the prime of their careers, and, you know, cheaper alternatives, I would say, on the trade market than a guy like a JJ Redick, who has not gotten the type of demand on the trade market the Pelicans would have expected coming into the season thus far. So I wanted to ask you on those two guys who could be valuable role players on another team that's a playoff caliber team. What are you hearing in terms of Ben McLemore and Daniel House and teams that have interest in him or have made offers on the board to Houston?
Well, I'll start with Ben. Like I said, last year, Ben was one of the best, the league's best shooters, period. I think he took over 8 threes a game, hitting them at a 40% clip, which is phenomenal value. This season, he's been on a shooting slump, but I think Ben's value was at its best when he was surrounded with guys like James and Russ that could create, you know, and draw and use their gravity to find him great looks. Whereas this season, they're kind of, it's less organic, if that makes sense. That's kind of been part of his struggles shooting. But the whole team, you know, overall has really struggled in terms of three-point shooting, outside attack, just in and out blend. I think Ben is a guy, if you're a contender looking for shooting, he's an easy pickup. And I think his value right now, I believe you could get a second for him. I believe so. I mean, or, you know, I think he's somebody that if you're a Philly or if you're a Brooklyn or, you know, even the Clippers or something like that, you should be looking to pick him up because it's pretty much a cost-effective move. And he's somebody that can come in and instantly make your outside attack that much more potent. I wouldn't put too much stock into the shooting slump right now just because the whole team is going through it. It's pretty hard to get efficient looks as a shooter if you're not, if there's no gravity, if there's no effective driving kick. Now, he has missed some open shots as well, but as a shooter, you need that rhythm and that consistency, and the minutes haven't been always been there and stuff like that. So a lot of things go into the slump this season, but he still is a guy that can flat out shoot it on his best nights. And if you're a contender, you should be looking to pick him up. Daniel House, I haven't heard as much about him recently. He's someone that I've heard of in the past, but as far as with the deadline approaching, I haven't heard as much. But like Ben, he is somebody who can help a team with his athleticism, playmaking. He's also improved defense as of recent before the injury. But he's gone through a lot of like weird, like knick-knack injuries, like the back recently, the elbow and stuff like that. Like he's gone through a lot of, he's been dinged up. But Daniel House is somebody. If you pick him up right now, you know, he can add to your second unit. He's an effective ball handler. He's a good tertiary and secondary ball handler. He can create plays for others. He's somebody who can impact a winning team. And like Ben, like Daniel, the Rockets have a number of those guys that can help. Even if you want to throw on Sterling Brown, too. The Rockets have guys that can help good teams get better. So, There's a reason why there's been a lot of interest in those guys with the deadline approaching, because those guys are effective players.
So you touched on McLemore for a second round pick. I could see that. In terms of House, I would assume the value is roughly around the same there. With that said, you know, you talked about him being Ben McLemore being effective around guys that can create like James Harden. Now they've got a guy who's kind of emerged as a playmaker, Kevin Porter Jr., who his talent was, if you talk to any executive around the league, no one ever questioned Kevin Porter Jr.'s talent. The question was more, can he keep his head on straight? quite frankly. And, you know, so far in Houston, they've had good reviews on him. I know you've written about that. You know, he's been a bright spot for this team. Jayshon Tate has also been a bright spot as a rookie for them. Love what he brings to that team on both sides of the ball. Efficient guy on offense and defensively, can guard multiple positions. When you look at those two guys, you know, it's not all gloom and doom for Houston as they're rebuilding. You know, those guys are some of the guys that they're looking to move forward with. In terms of Kevin Porter Jr. and Jayshon, you know, what's the outlook for them from Houston going ahead as they get this rebuild project going? What do they envision for those guys?
I think it's very positive. If you look at Jayshon Tate, you look at a rookie who's coming undrafted. Everyone knows his story, but he's coming and done the work. He's been one of the hardest workers on the team on a daily basis. He listens. He's like a sponge. He soaks up all that information. He's been effective as a roller. He's been a sturdy defender. His shooting obviously needs improvement, but as far as everything else, he's done the work. Like, he's just been there, and he's been consistent for them in a place where they haven't had that consistency. It's been very exciting to watch. Kevin Porter Jr. is another one, you know, incredibly gifted, talented player who just needs the right system around him to succeed. He needs that love and support, and I think he's gotten that in Houston so far. Obviously, they sent him down to the bubble to kind of learn the ropes of a point guard and get acclimated to the system, but also develop as a leader, get more mature, and learn how to handle those responsibilities that come with being, you know, a point guard. I think he did that very well in the bubble with the Vipers. And since he's been back with the team, you've seen it. Like, he has that gravity. He has that pizzazz as a player where obviously you want him to take less difficult shots, but he has the swagger. He has the tools. He just needs to develop, get more reps, you know, get older in this league and play with better players around him. Obviously, when John, Vic, Christian come back, he'll look even much more potent. Eric Gordon as well. So I think he's someone that they should hang on to. He's a very exciting player to watch. And I think for Kevin himself, the best is yet to come.
You know, in terms of Kevin, he's a guy that could, as long as he keeps up his play, become a real fixture of that core. You know, we touched on Jayshon as well. Christian Wood is a part of that core. You know, as I touched on earlier, a guy that is as close to untouchable as you can make on the Houston Rockets right now, given their roster construction. To me, he's a guy that's firmly in that most improved player of the year conversation. I think it's going to really come down to him and Jeremy Grant by the end of the season. Is that something that Christian is looking to get, that most improved player of the year award? And in terms of Christian Wood with the Rockets, what are they viewing him as long term as a core piece there?
So to your first point, yes, I think he does want that award. He did not appreciate not being voted as an All-Star, but you know, he missed a ton of games, so there's no argument there. But in terms of what the Rockets view him as, I think you could consider him a franchise corner piece right now, given the age, the money he's on, the production he's had already, and how they've looked without him. That's the biggest tell. You know, they haven't won a game since he left. That's point blank period. Like, however you want to slice it, which is pretty phenomenal if you go back to Wood's career and how he actually got to this point. He's been phenomenal as a role man. He's shown been an effective floor spacer, pick and pop, just whatever you want to. I think the biggest thing for him this season was, could he become a rim protector? Could he become a defensive force? Could he become an anchor that Stephen Silas could depend on? And before the injury, you were seeing that improvement. He was able to switch better. He was able to be more vocal in the half court, calling out sets, calling out screens and blitzes and stuff like that. He was able to, he improved as a shot blocker himself. Like, if you look at the on-off rim protection numbers of Wood, I think it was almost, it was around 10 points difference, the same as guys like Miles Turner, you know, Gobert. Like, it was similar in that range. So Wood is somebody who the Rockets should be looking to build around. But obviously the biggest thing is going to be the injuries. Can he stay healthy? He recently changed his shoes, going to the high tops now. So maybe that will prevent more of the ankle injuries. Because the last injury, that was a nasty roll. If you remember that game, that was a nasty roll of the ankle. And the Rockets, their biggest worry internally was that it became like the Steph Curry version of old, where Steph kept injuring the same ankle over and over and over again to the point where he needed surgery. So they want to avoid that as much as possible. And that's why you're seeing him taking the approach that they've taken now. He's been out for, a month and a half almost, if not more. They want him to be healthy, and they want him to, be at his best. So they do see him as a long-term play, for sure.
Gotcha on that. And, I mean, at the top, you were touching on Steven Silas. I wanted to kind of wrap it up with. And in terms of him wanting Victor Oladipo as a guy that could be a two-way player, from having Harden and Westbrook vouch for him to get the job, and then they both get traded, this guy has had to deal with a ton of injuries on this team. And like you touched on it, they need bodies. I'm surprised they haven't talked to you about a 10-day contract yourself. but when you look at Steven Silas, I feel like you can't even evaluate, you can't evaluate him. This guy is definitely, I think he is a capable coach in the league, but it's so hard to evaluate when he hasn't had any guys to really work with. I mean, what is the evaluation of Steven Silas and the job that he's had to manage with this team? I almost feel like he's been equally as much of a PR person for the Rockets, having to answer so many questions about James Harden's trade availability, PJ Tucker coming out of the lineup, et cetera. It's almost like when Brett Brown was with Philly at the start of the rebuild for them, and talking about trusting the process and tanking and things like that. I just feel like Steven Silas has gotten a real crash course in terms of NBA head coaching life this year. What do you evaluate him on as a coach at this point, and what does Houston think of the job he's done thus far this season?
Yeah, so it's pretty hard to get a read on just exactly what he is and what he's done, because there have been so many inconsistencies and injuries that it's hard to tell. Obviously, in a 15-game losing streak, you can't put the blame solely on the players, for sure. And there are things that Steven Silas could have done better. But he's playing the hand that he was dealt, and that's a pretty crappy hand. they've picked up so many G League guys, and it's hard to keep track. But it's hard. When they were so before the injuries, when they went on that winning streak, everything looked good, and it was kumbaya, and Steven Silas was great, and all that stuff. And now it just looks so bad. But like I said, it's hard to coach a team where you're not sure who's going to be available on any given night. I think at one point, their entire first 6-7 guys were out of the lineup. So John, Vic, Eric, Christian, Tuck, Daniel, those guys were all out, which is pretty incredible. And it's just so hard to know what he can do without all his tools available. So I think it's going to be a while. And as a front office, how do you evaluate that? It's pretty weird to understand. How do you evaluate your hire when you know that he hasn't been given the best tools to succeed, So I think on Steven Silas, you would have to give him an incomplete just because, like I said, there's nobody there.
Yeah. And I mean, again, I'm not in no way, shape or form am I saying, Steven Silas has to worry about job security. I'm not saying that at all. It's been such a wild situation for them. What strikes me is this guy came into this situation thinking, okay, I'm going to work with James Harden and even if it wasn't Russell Westbrook, he would get somebody else. And then the script completely flipped for him in terms of what he thought he was stepping into. And I think that not a lot has been made necessarily about that. I'm curious, for him in the back of his mind, how he feels, especially a guy that, you certainly want to get that opportunity. And we've seen it with Chris Finch in Minnesota, where guys, you have to take that opportunity sometimes when you've been waiting for a long time to get your chance. But boy, it's almost like if you get put in the wrong situation, are you going to get another chance after that? It remains to be seen. But, you know, Kelly, I certainly think ultimately PJ Tucker gets moved. I think for Victor Oladipo, certainly would be in Houston's best interest to move him. It's going to be a lot to follow on the Houston Rockets, and I know you will do a great job on the day-to-day coverage of that team. So everyone listening, make sure you're keeping tabs on Kelly. Appreciate you coming on as always, brother. Always good to hear your voice and chat with you, my man.
Love, bro.
Also want to thank everybody for tuning in as well. If you want to hear more episodes of the Hoops High podcast with guest appearances from players, coaches, executives, and media members such as Kelly Eco, you can like and subscribe to it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and anywhere else you listen to podcasts. You can also keep up with my tweets on Twitter, at Mike A. Scotto, and make sure you're following Kelly too. He's at Kelly Eco NBA as well. Until next time, I'm your host, Michael Scotto, wishing you and yours all the best.